Back Talk is an extension of the award-winning movie review show It's Movie Time, which airs on Fridays at 4:01 and 8:01 p.m. on WCBE 90.5 FM. Produced and hosted by John DeSando, this podcast features additional content and banter with guests. Back Talk is listed by FeedSpot as one of the top 10 movie podcasts on NPR.
Sweet. I'm John DeSando.
And I'm KG Klein.
And this is Back Talk. Well, Ken, as one of my superstars, critics, and you have recommended a film called Ash, A-S-H. That is, at least you alerted me to it, and we decided that we would do it. And I'm so happy that I have you here now, because to me, it's a hot mess.
Well, and it is a hot mess, John. I'm not going to dodge the subject on that one. Well, as you know, I'm a huge fan of low-budget horror films and low-budget science fiction films. Roger Corman made a career back in the 70s and 80s of churning out these very low-budget science fiction films, and they were all good. And they make the cult cinema circuit today, and they're very enjoyable films I could see again and again. And I had high hopes that Ash was going to fall into this. Mm-hmm. It looked good. The trailers looked really, really good. Wow. Very different film.
Can you set it up for us?
Okay. So the premise of Ash is that a woman wakes up on a space colony base on another planet with complete amnesia. She doesn't know who she is. She doesn't know why she's there. And everybody on the base, except for her, the crew of about five, has all been violently murdered. So that sets into motion then a very nonlinear storytelling of the backstory to what happened leading up to the opening moment of the film. Now, I'm also a fan of nonlinear storytelling. I think it works very, very well sometimes, and it can make a movie very dreamy. It can make it very, very, very interesting, but it doesn't work for horror. That's the problem.
As I'm looking at this movie, I said, haven't I seen this before? Wait a minute. There is a great film on a very similar subject called The Thing.
It does. It touches upon The Thing. We've got a little bit of The Thing. Interstellar is mixed in there.
Oh, yeah.
And I would even say Prometheus, a little bit of Prometheus sneaks in there as well. What I think this director was going for was more like Solaris or Sunshine, this abstract storytelling science fiction. But the Sunshine and Solaris both work very, very well because they're metaphysical stories.
Maybe because they take their time.
They take their time, but are also dealing more with thought processes, how we think, how we interact, how we relate to the universe around us, which you can tell nonlinearly. But when you're doing a horror film, it doesn't work because one moment you've got this character has been dead for hours, and then the very next scene, this character's alive because now you're back a couple of hours in the past.
Right.
So people are alive and then dead and then alive again and then dead again as the story goes on.
We could have expected some of this from Flying Lotus, the director, or who is a musician.
He's a musician, known for a very sort of dreamlike quality, very free-flowing,
yes,
I think is a good word.
Exactly.
To use. Style
right.
To the music.
Yes, that's right.
And trying to carry that free-flowing style into this movie. And I think that it would have worked if he had decided to do just a straightforward science fiction story like Solaris or even like Interstellar, but not a horror film. It doesn't work in a
horror. And you're elevating because Kurt Russell and his dog and whatever as I remember from 1980s, early 1980s in The Thing was a simple but grand horror.
I thought, The Thing is a fantastic film.
No, and I thought there might have been the same effect on this, except that he is so into the 70s psychedelic, it's just it just is giving me a headache.
The lighting is very difficult on the eyes. I sat there concentrating on this film, trying, because of course it uses the trope of the person with amnesia, which I've never been I've never liked that idea. I think that's a cheat. So you got this character with amnesia, and then the memories start coming back in pieces and not in chronological order. So suddenly she's remembering something important that happened 3 hours ago. Then she's remembering something that happened 6 hours ago, then 5 hours ago, and it just makes for an unnecessary hodgepodge of a story that you're trying to piece together like a puzzle in your mind that didn't need to be this way at all. There's no reason why this movie had to be told nonlinear.
And if you think about some of the greats like Alien
franchise,
there is an element of whodunit. but it's more of how horrible can you make it? How can your imagery be?
Yeah, films like this really are sort of haunted house movies in space. Obviously, Alien shows that they can work wonderfully. I can name films from the 1950s that worked wonderfully, too, in the same format. The monster on the loose in the space station or on the spacecraft. But this, it's a good story. The acting is fantastic, but it's been cut to pieces, re-edited. It's like they dumped the pieces into a box and then just pulled them out randomly and taped it together.
The images just drown the movie of any rationale. I have to admit, she is fetching, meaning both in the way that she acts and the way that she looks. Isa Gonzalez.
Yeah, Isa Gonzalez does a great job with the film. It's so nice to see her breaking away from the action hero format and showing that she really has some good acting chops.
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. Ken, I mean, we have to reveal some stuff here to make sense for our audience, because the movie doesn't sometimes make sense. We have to make sense. My simple love of Forbidden Planet, for instance, relies in the end on the monster actually being within, the enemy within.
The monster from the id.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you've got some of that motif here in this film. And I, you know, that has worked for me in the past. And I think even The Thing, as I recollect, was that monster coming from...
It was being generated by machines on the planet.
But it's taking over.
It's
people
killing,
there.
It's killing off everybody else because the monsters from the id become manifest and destroy our enemies, which in our dreams is everybody. Everybody that's not like
so
us.
When you look at your buddy next to you, your buddy could be the monster.
He could be the monster. He could be the person
over.
Generating
so
the...
So it's a pretty cool idea. And if you look at it, even current political climate, there are monsters all over the place. Allegorically, it works for totalitarian states as well, or being taken over by. It doesn't have to be aliens. It can be taken over by somebody who lives next door.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I thought it had the promise, Ken.
Lotus was trying to do here was to do something very much like Solaris.
Yeah.
Something very metaphysical.
Yes.
Something that reaches above just your standard slasher horror film in space. However, what we end up with is something that reminded me much more of a 20-year-old Vincent D'Onofrio film called Impersonator, which, and I'm sure there's two of you out there listening that remember this movie.
Count me out.
Yeah. It's basically, it has the same problems that Impersonator have. In fact, it has more problems than Impersonator had, because Impersonator was at least a chronological story. Oh, and the D'Onofrio film, I'm sorry, not Impersonator.
People say, why don't we pull out our phones? We don't do that.
No, we don't do that here. We don't do that. But yeah, it was that 20-year-old Vincent D'Onofrio film. Very similar in style and format, except that film shows that if you do it chronologically, it's okay. When you throw it together in non-order, it doesn't make sense. Okay. Imposters, the film.
Well, and she somewhat reminds me, again, Isa Gonzalez. I'm so impressed with her as a human being and as an actress. Doesn't she remind me a little bit of, would I be wrong to say, in the Star Wars? The newest beauty, who was really good.
It reminds me a little bit of her, yes. Daisy Ridley.
Yes, Ridley.
Yeah, Daisy Ridley.
Thank you. Yes, yes.
Yeah, it does remind me a little bit of Daisy Ridley. I think a little bit maybe of Jenna Ortega thrown in there as well.
You can see there's possibilities here.
No, and she's an established actress. We've seen her do a number of other things, but she's been pigeonholed into action films. And this did give her a chance to develop a character and show that she could. Aaron Paul, we have seen going back to the Highlander franchise.
K.G. Klein, this weekend, we've got Snow White, which is probably the complete opposite of the movie Ash that we're talking about.
Very true,
what
John.
Do you recommend about
Go
Ash?
See Snow White. Go see Snow. Snow White, folks, is terrific. It is easily the best of the live-action Disney adaptations. And the moments that they take directly out of the original 1937 movie and bring to life, the hi-ho and whistle while you work, it is just magic. You're back in the golden age of Disney once again.
You saved the show because we consider ourselves, among other things, cheerleaders.
So if we can't recommend movies. Ash, we can at least recommend Snow White.
A-S-H, Ash. I'm so urged to try to say something clever about the title.
Well, the title refers to the ash that's constantly falling on the planets because of all the volcanic activity. So they walk outside and they're just bombarded with ash.
Notice that we have resisted the urge to say something smart-alecky about the title and the movie. But the movie does tend to either make me fall into ashes or makes me blind with ashes or whatever it does, because I really wanted, when you said it, and I love good science fiction, so you are spot on to say, John, I think we ought to look at this movie. And I'm glad that we are, because we're usually pretty positive about our movies.
And around this time every year, we usually get one low-budget science fiction film. Last year was ISS, which was not a bad film. I actually enjoyed ISS. And this year, we get Ash. John, with this movie, I just wanted to take out a pair of scissors and cut this movie and put it back together in chronological order so I could watch the movie unfold in a rational pace. What Flying Lotus was trying to do was something very metaphysical, something that was a commentary on how we relate to each other.
Oh, I agree. I think you're right. And that's what the promise was for me, too. I was mentioning the allegorical elements of it. Yeah, because it doesn't have to be monsters of the id for you to know that good and bad people walk around, and sometimes we just can't figure out who they are.
And so many of the great science fiction novels are really very introspective, inside your head more than it is the action that's going on in the outside. Dune is actually one of those as well. It makes them very difficult to film, but when you do film one right, you get a very, very interesting piece of work. Ender's Game was an example of trying to do one right. Didn't quite succeed. So much of what was going on in that young boy's head never made it on the screen for it to have the impact that the book did, but at least they tried. They really did try. But this, you know, he's trying to do Solaris, and for those of you who don't know, Solaris is a Russian science fiction story, Stanislav Lem, about a person who goes to another planet, and that planet is able to create from their mind companions and events that have happened in their past, and they find themselves reliving these memories, but in very distorted and abstract ways. And it's a fascinating movie and a fascinating story. Well worth reading if you ever get the chance. But Flying Lotus chose to go with a slasher horror film.
Well, I'll tell you, Ken, you're making me think that this Mickey 17 or 19 was actually a decent
Mickey
movie.
Mickey 17 is a decent movie. Right. I was disappointed that it underperformed.
But I can grasp these ugly little monsters. They're invading their planet. They're taking over. And metaphorically, it works again for me. You know,
and the whole point there is, as nasty as those little grubs are, the people on the spaceship are nastier.
I know.
They're the villains. The grubs with all those teeth aren't going to kill you. They're actually very compassionate little cuddly teddy bears.
And that's mid-20th century colonization urge. And that's us going where we don't belong. Mm-hmm. And people who don't want us and don't want us to take over. So it has good possibilities.
And this movie, Ash, just like Mickey 17, you can take almost every science fiction story set in space and break them down into two categories. You have the group where space has been colonized and there's a billion people already living in space. Those are shows like The Expanse, the universe that Alien was set in. Lots and lots of universes out there where space is extensively colonized. Then you have the others where there's not even 100 people living in space. And that's films like Interstellar and like this movie, Ash.
Sure.
Personally, I like the films where there's lots of people in space because you get a lot more activity.
Sure.
These ones where you're alone, you're the only person out there, there's nobody for you to contact. Earth is 2 days signal away. This is where you get these great haunted house stories, because there's this isolation that format brings, where it's just you and your companions, if there are any, against the emptiness, the loneliness, the vastness of space. And that alone can lead to a very good metaphysical story.
Yeah, it really can. Yeah.
This, though, it's trying so hard to do something and then ending up with a slasher horror film that's filmed out of order.
Well, let's go back to our litmus test, per usual.
Okay.
And I mentioned Forbidden Planet.
Yep.
Because that monster comes out of the chief scientist's id, and you don't find that out until later in the film. What is destroying? What is able to go through all these steel panels and everything in that
movie?
And
getting back to the point that when you go to an alien world, sometimes you discover you're the enemy.
Yes.
You're the villain.
This is the enemy within.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And I find those movies fascinating because it means that we have not risen so far. As Arthur C. Clarke once very brilliantly said, man is closer to the ape than is man to the Superman.
Yes.
And that's how primitive we still can be when placed in such an amazing circumstance.
Don't you think you're describing part of the attraction of Planet of the Apes?
Well, the ape element.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Planet of the Apes, that's a really interesting science fiction story because it is about society.
Yes.
It is about prejudice. It is about racial injustice.
Yes.
You know, and the idea that here we are in the 1960s, the great masters of our world, and yet we can make a mistake that lets it all go to hell.
Oh, yeah.
One of the greatest endings in any movie, science fiction or otherwise.
And it always spins us back to 2001. Throwing the jawbone in the air, monkeys or whatever, with making that direct parallel between our origins.
Ah, yes. Kubrick at probably his greatest, telling the story that he always tells in his movies, which is how humanity and the individual absolutely no control over their own destiny. Every yes. one of Kubrick's movies can be summed up in one short concept. The individual has no control over their own fate.
Then you take a more modern and a very appealing to me, Quiet Place.
Okay, yeah.
Okay? I'm always just disappointed when they try to show a monster.
Yeah. Right?
And yet I'm able to take this one because it's been so long in the movie till I get to that point where I see the monster.
Quiet Place was an interesting concept. It's something that hadn't been tried before. The first movie really didn't work for me. I found the first movie very tedious.
Well, the concept was very tedious.
The concept was interesting, yeah. But production of it was tedious for me. However, the sequel I found to be very good. And then the most recent one I think is the best of the bunch, the prequel that goes back to the moment when they first arrive. Even though it is more of an action film than the first two movies, but still I think the premise holds up even better in the third one than it does in the first one.
You know, we've discussed this before, that this whole chatterbox business of our contemporary life, and particularly smartphones and so on, mm-hmm. and talking heads on television and so on, and so much jabbering, that quiet as both positive, I'm so happy that there's not so much jabbering, but also is menacing. In life, you can't just avoid it, even if you don't talk. You can't avoid the monster's going to get you.
And when the monster is something connected to things like our cell phones, then that becomes even more, to me, it becomes even more interesting because then you have to ask yourself, is the cell phone a villain or is a cell phone a creation that we made, that we turned upon ourselves? There's a wonderful book that Stephen King wrote about 20 years ago. He had intended, called Cell. He had intended it to have George Romero make the movie version because it's sort of King's...
buddy George Romero.
My buddy George Romero. Unfortunately, George passed away before they had the opportunity to film it.
Yeah.
That was the idea. And it is the story of how cell phones can send a signal that was apparently produced by a terrorist organization that just fries your brains and turns into zombies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of King's most effective books because, once again, there's no villain in the movie. It is all us. Some of us have been turned and others haven't, which is the whole basic foundation of Romero's zombies. They are us. They're us. In some ways, they're a purer form of us because they're acting singularly towards one goal, which is to eat and survive. They're not distorted. Their ideas aren't distorted by things like religion and culture and morals. They're very pure forms, as Romero would say. And we see that again in 28 Days Later in that series.
Yeah, we've got something coming up.
We've got 28 Years Later, which will be coming out in a couple of months.
You're reminding me in this case of Mad Max.
Okay.
Where we're not necessarily on another planet.
the first of the great Australian apocalypse movies, yeah. And Mad Max, now we're going off in a very different direction because that's the post-apocalyptic universe is, I think, very different from the zombie universe.
Of course.
Because the post-apocalyptic universe is populated all by human beings who are us, and they share the same...
They haven't turned out that
they
well.
They haven't become something else. They haven't become zombies. Right. They haven't become...
We are who we are.
Like in The Thing. They haven't become something other than us. And so what you see is it's basically the fall of society.
Yes.
There's very little difference, I think, between Mad Max and this Angel Films studio movie that came out just recently about a nuclear bomb that goes off in Los Angeles,
right.
And society collapses, and the guys who know how to use a 50-caliber machine gun and have ATVs and don't drive electric cars are the heroes. But that's a very right-wing version of the story, whereas you would see in Mad Max a much more left-wing, I think, portrayal, where the fall of society can only be redeemed by bringing back the best elements of society, which is not the ones who have the guns and the leather jackets and the chains.
But I love the reliance on gasoline, for instance.
Oh, yes, yes. Gas is the commodity. Gas is the gold.
Where we're still, and we're going back. Our current regime is going to push us back into those days.
Unless he can talk us into all buying Teslas.
Yeah, right. What was the joke I heard? It was a great one. Telling these people not to destroy the Teslas, they'll do it themselves. You know how they're bombing and they're wrecking Teslas.
Yeah, they're wrecking them. They're running into
Don't do it. It'll do it itself.
It'll do it itself. Painful moment for people who are liberal because the Teslas are all electric cars. Electric cars are extremely helpful to the environment. They're very beneficial. They don't pollute. They're very efficient. They're also very fast, folks. Suddenly, this has all been turned on its end because now we've got the conservatives or conservative president trying to convince us to buy Teslas so that one particular person's company doesn't go out of business.
Oh, yeah. Another great. Do you see any of, and I'm not really on top of my Matrix, but does Matrix fit in anywhere here for us?
Matrix is so frustrating for me, John. Matrix, when the movie first came out, it generated more buzz than I think any film since Star Wars.
Yes, I think
everybody
right.
thought, oh my God, these guys have got some really amazing idea, and watching it unfold over the next couple of movies, we are just going to be blown away at the brilliance. And we were all speculating, it's going to do this, it's going to do that. There was fanfic being written. Then the second one comes out, and you realize they had no idea where they were going with that. The stuff that we were speculating was by and large better than what ended up on screen. And the fanfic was almost always much better story ideas for where the story was going to go than what ended up on screen. They had no clue what they were doing. The Wachowskis, oh my gosh, you guys were given a golden ticket to do whatever you wanted, and you did trash with the second and third.
That's why, and I thought about it when I was watching our current movie, Ash, and wondering if Flying Lotus wasn't one of the brothers. Just dreaming of something and maybe not even knowing where he's going to end up, except that, yes, the enemy is within. Okay, we got that. At least that we have that focal point.
And it's not that the film is god-awful. It really isn't.
No.
The opening of the film is, apart from the I don't like the use of amnesia, I think it's overdone, but the first act isn't interesting. It keeps your attention, and it's mostly linear. It's mostly chronological.
We're tracking through the ship, and that has not the first time that's been done.
No.
There's a certain suspense in all that.
You can tell it's really a very low-budget production. It doesn't have all the buttons and all the gizmos and everything. It doesn't look anything like that.
Probably going through some of the same sets.
Yeah, it doesn't. It looks like somebody's cheap apartment. It doesn't look like the Nostromo. But the second act is where it really fell apart for me, John, is because that's when it starts getting nonlinear, and it just throws you, like, what? Where in the timeline are we? Oh, wait, this person's alive now. Oh, no, they're dead. Oh, no, they're alive again. I had a very hard time keeping track of where we were in the past because it was such an abstract form of storytelling. It was distracting.
Currently, seeing Snow White is probably a better deal.
Oh, gosh, yes. Gosh, yes. Yeah, Snow White.
It actually makes sense.
Snow White is, I really didn't like the live-action Disney films. I thought that was a very bad direction for Disney to go. But this is my exception to the rule. I really think that Snow White works. It works very well. Take your kids to see it because it's an opportunity for your kids to experience that golden age of Disney, that 1930s, 40s era of Disney brought back onto the screen in a new way that the other films weren't able to do.
And that's why I promote a little bit the Alto Nights, because that's, again, another kind of throwback for us. Cinema that was serious and acting.
An opportunity to see one of the great actors of our era in two roles, acting his heart out and doing what a great actor does, which is holding your attention, getting you caught up in the story and taking you on a journey.
And so, therefore, we would say, for whom is Ash really the movie we would encourage them to go?
Cult science fiction buffs.
I agree.
People who like going to cult screenings of old science fiction films, you might get something out of Ash. More likely you're going to be like me and you're going to try to compare it to science fiction films you've seen before.
Right.
Like I said, there's two of you out there that probably remember Imposter. But if I say it and I say Ash is just like that, you're going to immediately know what I'm talking about.
And there are some people out there who remember The Thing.
Oh my gosh, there's more than some. When it was when the Drexel screened it last year, they almost sold out the theater. And I know that AMC has done screenings of it, and it's almost a guaranteed sellout every single time. Now, it's not my favorite Carpenter movie. I would rather see Big Trouble in Little China anytime, because I think good. That movie, in some ways, I like that movie better than some of the Indiana Jones. Kurt Russell. Yeah, it's sort of a fun comedy take on the Indiana Jones stories, but in many ways works better than the Indiana Jones films.